back to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm your host, Lee Frazier, and I'm with
Jonathan Canary.
Yeah, we're in Halifax, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Yep. Drove up early this morning to record a couple episodes and get some supplies for our upcoming expedition across the Cape Breton Highlands National Park coming up next month, which is now full.
The trip is full.
It's amazing.
It's exciting.
It's crazy.
Wow.
It's wild. So a few things before we jump into this podcast. Like I said last week, we have a clothing sale online on our shop. So if you want to pick up any merch, we're clearing out all past merchandise from last season. We've selling everything for 30% off. Head to livelifeintense.shop to check it out. We're also running a pre-season sale on our glamping and experience packages at the campground starting in June, running through till the end of October through our summer season. I hope you guys enjoyed last week's podcast with Kyle and Robin. I know we had a fun time doing it, didn't we?
Yeah, Kyle and I go way back, so it was nice to catch up.
Yeah, yeah. And we got a lot of great feedback so far. A lot of people messaged me about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was fun to sit down and, didn't die in that storm, obviously, because I'm here this week. But this week, who do we got?
We have Benoit Lalonde.
Yeah, how does everybody know him?
Waterfalls of Nova Scotia and Waterfalls of Cape Breton guy.
Yeah, he's written two guidebooks on exploring waterfalls here in Nova Scotia. And we've been following him for a while, messaging back and forth, and happy to finally sit down with the man, the waterfall man.
Let's jump right into it.
Yeah, let's not listen to me talk anymore.
Let's jump right in.
Okay, cool. Live Life Intense on all social channels, and we will jump into it. Cheers. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Living Life Intently. I am your co-host, Jonathan Canary, and we have Lee with us.
Yep, yep. Just adjusting this mic stand because it's going to fall off if I don't.
Oh, who's our guest today, Lee?
What?
Who's our guest today?
Benoit Lalonde. Did I say it correctly?
Yeah, it works.
Oh, shit. How do you actually pronounce it?
Benoit Lalonde.
That was close.
No,
that
was pretty, I said it worked.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
You said it in a way that I'm like, oh, fuck.
It sounds more like poetic when you say it, though, with your accent.
Yeah, or just like Pepe Le Pew, too.
All right.
Well, why don't we just kick this off by just doing a quick intro for yourself. Let everybody know who you are, and then we'll get rock and rolling.
Sounds good, yeah. Hi, it's Ben here, the waterfall guy, bit known as a mountain goat too when I go hiking with people. I'm also the author of two different waterfall guides, one for Nova Scotia, published 2018, one published in 2021 for Cape Breton Island. Unfortunately, selling books actually doesn't pay the bills, so I do have a regular job. I work as a biologist for Environment and Climate Change Canada. And I look after water quality, not just I as a team, for the Maritimes. Yeah. And looking at water quality could be everything. Could be like just taking a water sample, putting an instrument in the water. Could be taking sediment. Sometimes I actually get paid to go fishing, which is kind of sweet.
That's why you're all around the place. You're all over the place.
Yeah, I'm all over. I love exploring, and this province has so much to offer. I just can't stop.
That's amazing.
So that's kind of, it goes hand in hand. You get to travel around. So is that kind of how, do you base your exploration area? Like when you get positioned or sent to a new location, does that kind of dictate where you're going to go? Or do you kind of do two things, get two birds stoned at once, as the trailer park boys say?
Yeah, well, don't tell my supervisor or anything, but it kind of works out that way. I mean, if I know I'm going to Shitikan in February, well, then I'm going to start looking at places I can explore. So, I'll do my work day. February is kind of dicey because, the sun sets around 7. So It'll be like a really quick in and out. If I'm in, let's say, Marguerite in June, then the sun sets at 10 or 9:30. I have lots of time. I can go further. All that being said, that's, on my work days, but I also go to Cape Breton a lot just on my own, just on my own time.
And how did you get let's set it up for everybody. How did you get started in doing this and chasing waterfalls? Well, I always said, so when I say chasing waterfalls,
chasing waterfalls.
Rivers and the streams that you used to. Isn't that it? Is that part of the song?
That's it.
Something like that. Anyways, how did you get started in doing all this sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's a long story, so I hope you got some time.
We got the time, baby.
Awesome. it's always hard to say exactly what got anything started in life.
Yeah.
But one of the things that really, comes to my mind is I was posting a lot of pictures on something called Panoramio. So if you guys are old enough, and you guys are old enough, Panoramio was linked to Google Earth, the first instance of Google Earth. And if you had an account with Panoramio, you could link it up to Google Earth. And if it was anything without people, so it had to be a natural feature, Google Earth would actually put a little blue square in Google Earth of your picture because you had put the lat longs for it. So I did that for a while because it actually reminded me of places that I had been. So it kind of kept as a reminder for me, don't go back there to that river. You've been there. So I had that for a while. And then all of a sudden, this guy from PEI, out of the blue, got my email somehow, emailed me and said, man, that waterfall that you got there, it's called Seven Falls in the valley, Annapolis Valley. And he said, I'm an ice climber and that looks outrageous. I want to be there. I want to go there. Can you tell me more details about it? I replied in the email. I said, yeah, man, no problem. Here's how to get to it. But the problem is that fall is about 10 feet high. It was all about a perspective thing. Yeah. I had a wide angle. There's no people in the picture because that's what Panoramio wanted. So I said, that fall is not going to do it for you, but others, and I named a few are going to do. That guy was actually, and so the story continues, that guy was actually, he helped out on a website called Trail Peak. Trail Peak is this guy in Ottawa that built it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's Canadian. And basically, it'd be the all trails, but, back in the almost 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not an app, like a national website. And so this guy was helping out for the East Coast part of it. And he said to me, looks like you're going to a lot of places, man. Do you want to start posting on Trail Peak? People are just going to follow. It'll be easier than writing emails to X, Y, and Z on directions, right? So I did that for a while. And then coming to the book now, I'm close.
Take your time.
Oh, no, yeah. We're not rushed, right, man. Right. Just do it.
All right. Sounds good. Then, did that for a few years. My plan was always to actually beat the founder of Trail Peak in the number of posts.
It always starts. There's always a game. Yeah, that's how it always starts. A little bit of competition.
And then I think I did surpass him at some point. And out of the blue, Goose Lane is a book publisher out of Fredericton. I think it's Canada's oldest publishing house. They just called me. They have a nonfiction person that looks after acquisition, and they said, hey, we're looking for somebody to write a book for us on waterfalls for Nova Scotia. And she said, I've kind of looked through, on Google search, let's say, and your name keeps popping up. Do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, totally.
Sick. How did you come to Nova Scotia?
That's a great question. So I grew up in Montreal.
Yeah.
Did my studies in Ottawa, met my wife there, and she's in the health field. And when she finished her degree, her post degrees type of education, she couldn't move elsewhere in the country. And she got matched and she liked it. Nova Scotia had a program out of Dalhousie.
Yep.
And the program at Dalhousie, you could, be in Halifax, obviously, but you could also be in Sydney.
Yeah.
And she really wanted to be in a smaller setting. So we moved to Sydney from Ottawa to Sydney.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, it's going to sound bad, but in central Canada, they don't teach you a lot about Cape Breton Island. And when I took Highway 4 from St. Peter's to Sydney, and I gazed upon the Brador Lake, I said, what the fuck is that? I had no idea. So I'm really sorry about that.
It's funny. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Nobody knows anything about Cape Breton. Trust me. The rest of the, well, they're starting it now, but yeah.
It's such a hidden gem. It's gorgeous.
Well, the worst that there was one time I was in Florida when I was a kid and we stopped at this gas station and, And Buddy's like, yeah, so where are you folks coming in from? And he goes, oh, you know, Cape Breton Island. Cape Breton, where's that? I'm like, oh, Nova Scotia. Oh, so what boat did you come over from? I was like, huh? So Buddy thought we were from Europe.
But then there's also the thing where it's like, everywhere, almost everywhere I've traveled or everywhere I've lived, I've run into someone and they'll be like, where are you from? And they'll be like, you know, Canada or Nova Scotia in Canada. And they'll be like, oh yeah, whereabouts? Cape Breton Island. Oh yeah? What part of Cape Breton Island? Oh, the CBRM. Oh yeah? What part of the CBRM? Oh, Glace Bay. Oh geez, you know Buddy, what's his name down on South Street? And be like, hey, he's my uncle.
I have had that happen. Yeah. It's interesting. So you lived in Sydney for a little bit.
Yeah, I lived in Sydney for 2.5 years. Loved it. I mean, I don't want to say anything bad about Sydney, but it was kind of the end of the last mine at that point, 1999, right? Uh-huh. And so, I mean, it was a bit doom and gloom.
Yeah.
And the people, I can understand why. But, I mean, one, the people are so nice and made up for it big time. And then the scenery is just so fantastic. I love living there. The only problem is I never actually got like a full-time job when I was there. I did everything. I was a substitute teacher at the French school board. I was a park interpreter all the way in Shettycan for Parks Canada. I built the Trans-Canada Trail, just a small section out of North Sydney, and did some DFO contracts.
Cool. That's a thing in Cape Breton. You have to have like a few different hustles pretty well to like make a comfortable living. Yeah,
one on the books and the rest are off the books.
Yeah, or in a gray area anyway.
that's the cycle.
Yeah,
get the stamps and then work cash. Mm-hmm. Not that may or may not be true. I don't know. Hopefully no one from CRA is listening. I don't do that.
Just to give a bit of background, I followed you for a really long time. And when I got, so we would do work with DCBA. We would go to all these places, Destination Cape Breton Association. We would do film work for them. And we'd go to all the like hot tourist spots, you know. And one time somebody was one of the facilitators or something told me to check you out on Facebook. And so I did. So then, you know, years later when I got, I'm a recovered addict and I got clean and I started doing some more outdoor stuff. I found it really therapeutic. My mom bought me your book. And so I went through a good 80% of that book.
Nice.
That summer, right? And then, so I'm posting all this stuff and people are sending me maps. And somebody sent me the link for your private map. And so there's like 280 spots on that. I think I cleared off like 150 of them at least.
Yeah. A few kilometers, what?
Yeah. So then we get to talking on Instagram and whatever, and you release this new book and we go, a few of us, Lee and I actually went to your book signing.
Yeah. Thanks.
Last fall.
That was awesome.
And, you know what you wrote on the inside cover? Jonathan, you're a crazy waterfall addict. Like, interesting choice of words.
Did I nail it?
Yeah, I remember when you released the Waterfalls in Nova Scotia. I can't remember where I was at, but my brother texts me and he goes, "Did you hear the radio today?" I go, "No, why?" He goes, "Turner Brooks out, bud. Turner Brooks out." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "Somebody's on the radio saying Turner Brooks, talking about Turner Brooks. It's gone now. It's gone." I was like, "What are you talking about?" And then, because Turner Brooks, for those listening, it's like huge waterfalls. And it was, I found out, my friends and I found out about it because this older guy was there and he was like talking. We're at, you know, a family get together or something. And he goes, "Oh, there's this crazy falls. You got to go up here and then you can swim a section and go up this." I'm like, "Where?" And Turner Brook. I'm like, "Oh, okay." So we went, dad's in the forestry business. So we have this not anymore, everything's digital, but at that point the maps were all big maps and we had this big thing full of maps, and I just kept pulling the maps out, and we pulled that one out and I looked at it and like, oh, okay, it's up in Big Interval, you go up this way, well, let's just go do it this weekend. And so all we knew was that there was a big falls up there. And so we looked at the map and I'm like, okay, it's the second branch off. So from the Skidrow Bridge, go up the brook, it's your second branch off to the right, and it's up there Summers. Okay, cool, let's go. And then we win. And we get to like the brook and you get to the second branch off. And I'm like, okay, it's like a 10-foot falls. I'm like, huh, let's keep going. And then we go up a little further and there's a bigger one. I'm like, it's got to be past here. So we like scale the rocks up around that, get up to the next one. We do this three. It's kind of like a video game is how I remember it, because we didn't know anything about this hike. And we hit three big waterfalls. I'm like, that can't be those. It's got to be bigger than this. We're like, fuck it, let's just keep going. So we keep going. And then the brook, which you're in the entire time, it's only about maybe shin height. And then all of a sudden it kind of like goes, builds into this rock canyon. And the brook just narrows. And then there's this rock, like kind of like really narrow canyon. And we're like, do we swim there? Yeah, whatever. Let's just swim through it. And so I remember my friend being ahead of me and he's swimming. And this brook, mind you, that you can walk in the entire way, gets over my head. And we're swimming through this canyon and we scale this rock. And then we come out and it's this huge kind of like bowl with greenery. And it was like August or September. And this massive waterfall, 100-some-foot waterfall shooting at the top of the mountain. I'm like, this is definitely it. We're not going any further than this. But that's how we found it. And we're like, okay. And then we went back and we jumped off the waterfalls going out.
Nice.
So we just were like, oh, it's scaling. Let's just jump. And it took everybody's, like, you know, everybody's standing there. They're like, I don't know if I should. We're in the middle of nowhere. Okay, one guy jumped and it's like, oh, well, he didn't die. Let's keep going.
Yeah, so, it's always the first one that, you know, it's dicey.
Yeah, right. But that's how I found out about it, because we had all these different hikes that we used to take people on that were like secret, like old guys told us about it. And and then it came out and we're like, God damn, now everybody's going to know. Everybody's going to know.
So you've had a good response from the books?
Yeah, very, very good response. I think the Nova Scotia one sold about 10,000 copies so far.
Wow.
It's cool. The way I think back on it is obviously who's buying it is people that live in Nova Scotia. You might get the odd visitor that would buy one, but I mean, really, it would be the local people. And if this province is only about 1 million people, well, if you sell 10,000 copies, that's one out of every 100 person, which is pretty cool.
That's, I think, nuts.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, I obviously our crowd is the hiking and outdoors crowd, but you know, everyone has one.
Yeah,
a copy. Yeah,
yeah. And I got a couple for the. I got one, the Cape Breton one from you, an extra one for the shop, and then I bought a bunch of the other ones too, just the Nova Scotia ones for the shop as well. Trying to build out a library of stuff when people are around, and we have. I mean, this summer we literally had an old map of Margaree that my aunt drew. And we on the back was like Alec, a friend of ours. Wrote every hike and waterfalls by hand and like how many kilometers and what rating it was. And so that was people ask a hike and I'm like, let's pull up that list. It's a handwritten list. And I'm like, take a picture of this. And then these are the ones to do. But now I was like, okay, enough of that. We're going to buy the book. This is going to be like, you know, we bookmark the more popular ones. And then, the ones that people, you know, with all experience levels can access. And, then we just kind of like take a picture of this. This is the one you want to go to. These are the instructions.
You know, I collect a bunch of old hiking books. So like the Michael Haines ones and stuff like that. Right. Yeah. So anytime I see them, I buy them. So I've got stacks of the same book, but they're all out of print. So, you know, I'll buy them if they're $2 somewhere or something, you know, but what I really enjoy about the book, your books are like how comprehensive they are in 2 pages. 3 pages or whatever, that there's, you know, topographic maps, there's descriptions, there's difficulty level, there's, you know, measurements and, you know, everything you need to know to navigate there is in there, right?
Yeah, like in 2 pages. It's nice and concise. Obviously, I'm a scientist, so writing is not my forte. So I was happy, that, you know, they didn't require that much text for each. Yeah. But I think the text that's there is super helpful. And there's just enough, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry about, you know, putting that Turner Brook on the map there.
Oh, man. No. So it's been, everybody's opinion. That's a cool thing about it. It's everybody's opinion, like, especially mine, has changed over the years because, you know, a big thing with, like, specifically that one, when we're, I believe you in the book, and I think I read, because after my brother had told me about the article, then I was like Googling it, and the only reference was on Trail Peak. Yeah. Of your description, and it's like, don't go up the brook or something like that. It's go over this, go up the mountain and go down. I'm like, okay, poof, because that hike up that brook, we've had smashed teeth, like dislocated arms, like, because it's, you're slippery. Yeah. If you don't have any dexterity and ability to jump on like wet rocks and navigate that stuff, yeah. It's pretty technical. And I've taken some people up, but we just, like, my concern with that sort of stuff, it's not so much, keeping people away from and not knowing about it. It's about like more of safety concern because I'm like, what happens if you get up there? I know myself, my ability of doing it, or if I take somebody up there, I know where to go. I know all the people that live within like a kilometer from there.
Yeah.
So I can just go to their place and bang on the door, break a window and use the phone. But, you know, worst case, but that's mostly our concern with things is about that sort of stuff. But yeah, when I started reading all the books and all your descriptions and instructions how to get there, I'm like, okay, well, yeah, whatever. Everybody's going to, nothing's secret anymore. So that's how my opinions have changed over the years. As long as people are doing it respectfully.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for that.
That's why I'm the producer.
and do it and don't leave shit behind. Then it's great.
Yeah. And that's something that I really struggle with. You know, did I reveal too many gems? No. Am I ruining it? But then in a way, do you protect it more by having more people visit it? You know, especially the people that actually, you know, care about the environment. Yeah. So there's actually some that I left out completely.
We'll talk after.
Wink, wink. Yeah. Nudge, nudge. Yeah.
Are there any places you left out because of, you know, danger or ability or... whatever.
Nope.
No. Like, fuck it. I don't care.
You bought the book. It's on your own. No. There are some safety aspects I go through in the introduction that you know most people won't read, but that's fine. To me, the first, you know, if somebody's listening to this and they're new into business of waterfall hunting, and you have that book, well, you know, start with the easy ones, and then you know. Progress to moderate and then to difficult. Mm-hmm. What's easy for me might not be for you.
Exactly.
My wife's always giving me a hard case that, you know, that was easy. Well, yeah. I mean, it's because if you only have four levels, well, everything can be difficult and extreme because, you know, so it's a fine balance. Maybe I should have put it like on 100 scale or something.
I don't know.
You take like you can only do your best, and what you think is your best, and advise people as much as possible, give them the information, and then that's pretty much out of your hands. I mean, anybody that's experienced, well, after you've released the waterfalls of Cape Breton, where did you guys go? And you guys had some experienced people with you, and what happened on that one?
Yeah, so we went to find Le Blanc Brook Falls.
Oh yeah, that's a nice one.
And so we had. We had a crew of ladies who were into photography, and myself and Jamie Fasello and Ella Clafort went. And so we were in the woods for about 2 hours. And we had found the canyon, but we couldn't figure out how to get down to it.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Right? And So the girls were at this point, we have been hiking in the woods for 2 hours up and down the mountain, trying to find a way around these cliffs. And they were just like, basically like, get us the fuck out of here.
That's a good workout.
So me and Jamie hike them back out to the truck, and Jamie and I, Alec said, well, I'm going to find a way down. We said, okay. So the falls got to be within the next kilometer of this river. So we'll find the falls and we'll meet you at the top of it. And he said, okay.
Oh.
So we hiked the girls out. We hiked back into where we were and we continued following the cliff and the mountain up and down and up and down. And finally we found the waterfall. We figured out how to get to the top of it. And we look and Alec's down at the bottom. I mean, this is a 200 foot drop. he's waving to us and whatever. And he says, you got to go up and really deep back and then down this slope.
Yeah.
So he's yelling to us. And so we did, and we came, and Alex said, yeah, yeah. I didn't go far enough back in the woods, and I fell off the cliff. But he fell onto like a scree.
Oh.
So when he fell, he slid quite far. He slid about 60 feet.
Oh, my God.
On the scree. And so, like, he's got a big old gash up his arse that I think he still has a scar from. But you know, like, he was very, very lucky. And you know, Alec is a mountain goat. You know, yeah. he's very experienced hiker and mountaineer. And yeah, even on that one, he was, it was something really fucked could have happened, right?
It takes a fraction of a second. I mean, I do this pretty much on a weekly basis, and, you know, accidents happen. It's just, yeah.
Any real close calls?
No, I've been super lucky. Never.
luck. Right?
Oh, here we go. Yeah. That's the end of that luck.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I do and I've done since I started is really trust that gut feeling.
Yeah.
You know, when you start scaling something and you don't feel good about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Always downscale it. Don't try to push further up. It's not going to get better.
Yeah.
Right. Just listen to yourself. Like, listen to that gut feelings. Like, if it doesn't feel right, turn around. And you know, the beauty is waterfalls are going to be there for thousands of years.
You know? They're not going anywhere.
They're all going to be dead and they're still going to be there. So if you miss it on that day that you're there.
Yeah. You can come back.
Who cares? Yeah. Just come back. I've done that Faribault Brook Falls. That's just at the entrance of Chitikan, one of the major tributaries of Chitikan River. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I that day, I mountain biked the whole, you know, like to the plateau. So, you know, 400 meters there. So I actually pushed my bike. I mean, it's pretty hard to go up. And then I ditched it. This was like an old ATV trail. I ditched it. Then I started to go downslope. And then I could see the fall and I could hear the roar. But the problem is like, I was too late. Like, there was not enough daylight to go to the bottom, come back up, take my bike out. So, you know, but then I just came back, you know, a couple of weeks later, or a couple of months later, and, and it was still there. Shocking.
Yeah. Right?
It hadn't changed.
Yeah. I, you know, I appreciate when I have a pin for something, but I really enjoy trying to read the land and the maps to go out and find something. Is that how you locate some of these things? You use topographic maps, you use satellite imagery.
Yeah. So I've been doing this for not a super long time, but long enough that actually satellite imagery was no help. Like when I started, you could pull the satellite imagery of an area and it was like some kind of a splotchy green, brown, like no way. These days it's incredible. You can actually explore the whole thing before actually setting foot there. So yeah, at first it was all about topo maps. Lots of topo maps and actually lots of bushwhacking to stuff that wasn't there. Like, there's just nothing there. So, you know, waterfowl hunting is a lot of bushwhacking that sometimes don't amount to anything. And actually, one story here is when I just started and you'd Google, let's say, waterfowls, Nova Scotia.
Yep.
There was this photographer that had a bunch of pictures on. And I remember like sending this person an email. It was on PBase. It's like a photographer.
Yep.
You know, yeah. And he never replied. And I just said, you know, oh man, like, you know, really cool pictures. How do you find out, you know, where all these waterfalls are located? Like right back then, there was nothing. And just the obvious ones, you know, in provincial national parks. Never replied. And then I don't know how it happened, but I found the mudderlode, and I'm sure that photographer, that's what he was using. Cause I kind of figured out after the fact, just the way he was naming the rivers. Anyways, what it is these old maps, and you guys have been to the book launch. So I've talked about this before, but those old maps from Hugh Fletcher, Eugène Faribault, 1870s, 1890s. You can find them online these days quite easily. GeoScan would be one of those places. David Rumsey map collection has them. And those maps actually have all kinds of waterfalls on them.
Wow.
Sometimes the waterfalls are there. Sometimes they're not really there. Yeah. I remember this Black Brook, Middle River.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you look at the old map, Black Brook, Middle River, you'll see a place and they've usually they just write fall or falls and sometimes the height. This place is the only instance I saw that they had written fine falls.
Fine,
like, you know, beautiful. I was like, oh my God, that's got to be like the most awesomest of all falls. So that was my first foray into Black Brook. So I took that dirt road, which I don't remember the name, and then, you know, turn left over that little bridge. And then if you go to Black Brook, Gerlach Falls these days, then that's where you start to climb the mountain. Instead, I just parked there and I made my way to the river because it's only like about 100 meters from there. And the Fine Falls location was actually close to the mouth of that valley. So it's like, well, that's, I don't need to drive all the way up. I'm just going to, anyways, yeah. I hiked up and up and up. There's no Fine Falls.
It's like a class one rapid.
Yeah. I mean, gorgeous, Stan. Like, I mean, it's a hardwood, gorgeous, gorgeous ravine, but it's like, there's no falls here. So anyways,
they meant fine, like one, like 300 grit.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think they had the students on that map maybe that day that, you know, plays that, because obviously the Fine Falls are the Gerlach Falls.
Yeah.
That's what, but they were just kind of misplaced by, you know, maybe a kilometer or something on those maps. Shit happens, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, it can go awry. Or people just got bored and marked it in the wrong spot, you know.
Yeah, no, I keep stuff. Keep it for themselves.
Yeah, maybe that too. Well, I mean, that wasn't me, by the way. Just so you know. Well, I mean, that wasn't me.
Lee's got some secret ones.
So. Misrepresenting.
Are there any spots that you would consider your favorite that you like going to? Like for me, you know, I have a handful that are kind of local to me that I like to spend time at, you know, I like to repeatedly visit, and it doesn't matter how many times I've been there. I like going there, you know.
If I lived in Cape Breton, yeah, I'm sure I would have like, you know, some kind of a list for like 5-6 waterfalls that I would go back to back, you know, again and again. I live in Dartmouth. Unfortunately here, you saw the topography, right? It's not super nice for waterfalls. So I don't really have any.
Yeah.
And the flip side of everything too is I keep like, so I got, like you said, that secret map.
Yeah.
It wasn't secret before, then it was public, then I put it secret. Anyways, long story. But I also have another map. That one's secret because that's all the waypoints that I want to hit.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, it's like, I want to go back to some falls because they're quite nice. Mm-hmm. But the problem is my map of waypoints that I want to get to keeps adding. Because every time I go somewhere, especially in Cape Breton, and I hit a valley, well, of course, in the distance, don't I see like 3-4 different things I want to see. And also that satellite imagery keeps getting better and better. And they'll, you know, they'll redo a section. And then it's, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, like, I got to go there. So
anything really mind-blowing?
Oh, yeah. It's a secret.
No, but like, what are some mind blowing spots that you've published, I guess?
Oh, I mean, the LeBlanc Brook was, I found pretty astounding. That Shitikan River Gorge site, definitely mind blowing there. Mm-hmm. But I think I haven't hit really like the big stuff yet. It's all on my other map. Oh. It's going to happen. It's just, it's 4-5 hours for me to get to those areas from Dartmouth. So there's a limited amount of times I can do that in a year.
Yep.
So I really have to pick and choose what I'm going to go for. I did a bunch on the Inganish Tributary back in November. That was quite nice. But because I don't live close, you know, I do that difficult one trip, and then 3 months later, it might be the next trip. I can't be doing it every weekend.
Yeah, I was looking at, we went up to, I was going to hit the gorge that day after, I think that was right after your book launch, because we were looking at, I was scouting the Shitikan River for a trip, paddle trip that I wanted to do. And so just getting an idea of what we were getting into. So I use, what is it? I'm trying to remember the mapping software that I use. Anyways, I was looking on their topo maps and they've got, multiple overlays that you can use. So you've got your elevation lines, you've got different, it'll give you a color code for, so if you're looking at like a peak, it'll give you a shading and how steep that peak actually is. So that's usually stone if it's the high rated. But then looking at falls and using different, satellite imagery that's very extremely clear, you can zoom in. And I think I counted, from what it looked like on that imagery, it looked like 20 some falls, big to small, on the Shady Camp River itself. And we went in to try to find, we found the first one that day, you and I.
Yeah,
and
then there was three that day.
Yeah, and then we were going to have them in the gorge, but you were gutted.
I was gutted after that, buddy.
So, so up and down and up and down. But yeah, so we were looking to scout that one up in the Pollitt's Cove Aspey Wilderness area. There is, if you go to Pollitt's Cove. When you're in the cove, there's a geocache. Just it's a hike, and there's like a beat up trail that goes right to that spot. But if you get up to top, if you stay on the right side of that valley and you scale the mountain, and then you can kind of go up to the top and get down in, there's a big one up there. That's the one we went when I was probably 14, 15, tried to rock climb the falls to get to the top of the mountain and nearly died. That was where we were climbing up and I was there with two friends of mine, and one of the guys had turned back. He's like, "Nah, this is too crazy."
We did seawall last winter. It was pretty epic. Ice shelf coming off that.
Well, you've got like, and then when you come down that coastline, Lower Delaney's.
Yeah, that's number one in my bucket
list. I was flying. So we got there, and it was like day two of that trip, and we were up on the seawall, up on the point overlooking, so you can see that big double-tiered waterfall, and I had the drone, so I started ripping my drone and ended up, like, I started losing signal in the drone. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm just going to jump over to the other side and get signal. Well, when I did, I'm just looking at the screen, was like a branch in the sky. I'm like, what? The drone crashed? So it lost signal and started dropping elevation and crashed. I'm like, where is this thing? So I have like 20% left. And that was me trying to, I was going to fly right to the falls and take a picture and fly back, lost the drone. And I'm sitting there going, I should probably just leave it. I got drone insurance. I actually got 2 days before. I was like, I'll just claim it. But we were going to Kedji right afterwards. I'm like, I need to find this drone. So then I'm looking on the drone app. If you crash it, you can click a button so that wherever your controller, you're basically looking at the map and your controller is pointing, it'll show you what direction to line it up with. And it said about 80 meters, but 80 meters was over the bank. So what I did, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to cruise down the side of this hill. And I was sliding down. Mass is so steep of a grade and underneath alders and going down, down, down. It's like 5% left, 3% left. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting closer. But I'm getting close to rock faces. I'm avoiding rock faces, sliding down the other side. And I get down and I'm like, okay, it's saying I'm underneath it. So I just start shaking trees and I'm trying to hold on to this cliff and I'm shaking trees. And I finally grab the tree, shake it, and the screen moves. I'm like, oh, it's right there. And I'm trying to shake it out of the tree and hopefully it would fall on me and not tumble down the bank. And then it'd be gone forever. And it ended up falling, hit me in the face. I picked it up and then climbed back up the mountain. And everybody on top of the mountain, I was gone for like an hour.
Oh, shit.
And they're like, what is going on? We thought you were dead.
but nobody was going for him.
No, everybody's like, fuck that.
We got insurance for that Lee guy.
Yeah, but that falls. And then the Shady Camp. So that one, the Pollitt's Cove, when you're in the cove, you go up to that first one. That brook, I'm trying to remember the name of the brook. It's when you're looking at the cove, Pollitt's Cove, and the main brook that goes Rain River that goes up, and then Blair River. Yep. So you go up the Blair River. There's another one up around the turn that I believe Coastal Adventures has pictures of up there on their Facebook.
These days you can see all of them on satellite imagery. I got in the Blair River system, I think I got 10 or 11 to check out easily. But actually you reminded me when you guys were talking about the seawall trail. Well, when I lived in Cape Breton in the year 2000, I think it was, I was working in Shady Camp as a park interpreter. And a friend of mine, she decided to come up from Ottawa, and she said, oh, I want to go camping, bring me something somewhere cool. And I said, all right, well, we'll find something. And back in the day, like, you know, like you guys were saying, looking at those big maps, right? Those big 1 to 50,000 topos. It's like, you know what would be cool? Lowland Cove to Pollitt's Cove. Let's do this over a weekend. All right, no problem. So we had two cars, luckily. Put one at Red River and then the other one at Meat Cove, paid the $5 to the camping owner there to take care of our car. And so, you know, first day, easy, up, down, slept right on the shore. then the next day was the big day. So, you know, got up probably early because it's summer and it's like day late pretty early, and then made it up to the, you know, basically the plateau.
Yeah.
And then the trail, the ATV trail we're on kind of ended up in a massive, massive bog.
Yeah.
And this is like pre-GPS. Okay. No GPS, just like compass and map, right? So we're like, all right, we'll just aim to Paul's, you know, cove, and eventually we'll make it. And the problem we found that day is if you stuck too close to the shoreline, I mean, you're high on the plateau, but still, you know what I mean? Like closer to the ocean, the alders.
Yeah.
The fucking alders. Oh my God. So nasty. So we ended up kind of rerouting, you know, away from it and not going down these smaller ravines that are chock full of alders. So that was pretty good. Actually, at some point, we actually found a marker, like a red marker on a tree from the old, old trail that I heard was in place in, what, the 60s, was it? I don't know. I don't even know what
they... Well, they used to walk... I was hearing stories from a guy in Meat Cove talking about his family. They used to walk to Pollitt's Cove and out of... Like, there used to be trail systems. There is an old cabin when you're in Lowland Cove. The main brook that feeds out into the ocean, that's kind of where we went up that brook to start... Kind of we crop right next to the beach. You get a Lowland Cove, the brook that comes out, you go down, you hike up the brook, and there's a cottage in there, old cabin, old log foundation that we walk by. And that's what we figured it was. It might have been like an old shelter, because you used to have shelters along the way, from what I understood. And so if you travel in the winter, you had like somewhere to stay, like a roof shelter, and you can camp out at.
So cool.
But yeah, they used to, man, one of the guys, the guy Miko was talking about, he said his family used to walk to Sydney. Like, if you walk into Sydney, I'm like, buddy, you're pulling my leg. You're definitely pulling my leg. He goes, nope, they used to walk to Sydney. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. You know, we did see Wall last winter. I almost said Christmas, but last winter, it would have been last March. And, when we got to about like, I don't know, what, 20 clicks from Red River, the cabin.
Oh yeah,
and we ran into this guy, and him and his family had come to this cabin that we were going to stay at, so we all arrive, and it's a fucking blizzard out, right? And he's there on a sled with his family, and we're like, fuck. And he says, "Geez, where are you fellas coming from?" And we said, "Oh, we're coming from Meat Cove." He goes, "Meat Cove? I don't even take the sled that far." "Boys, you can have the cabin. We'll just head home." Like, all right, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, that was an experience. Yeah, that was a fun little trip. The end of the winter type trip, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
It's fun, the people you meet on like some of these expeditions, you know.
I bet.
Just like, or like yourself, even yourself, like just the people you meet in the hiking or the outdoors community, all very unique. All have a little, you know,
a little quirkiness,
a little quirky, right? Oh,
one time I hike, I would say 99% of the time on my own.
Yeah.
And, this time I was up in the Cobequids and, drove this dirt road for a while, then through a lot of blueberry bushes on top of the mountains there, drove my car through there because I got enough clearance, and then left the car there, started on an ATV path, then started bushwhack about a kilometer to like just the exit of a stream into a major river, thinking there's a fall there. And luckily there was, so I was quite happy. So it was a small little gorge, and so I kind of had to kind of circumvent the whole rock walls and to get into inside the gorge. And so once you're inside, you're stuck. Like, you can't scramble out, except you can back up. And I'm taking pictures, and all of a sudden I hear something. So I turn around. This guy is like high up on the bank of the gorge, and he's looking down at me. And all I can see is this big freaking machete on the side of his fucking, on his side. I'm like, holy fuck.
Like, am I gonna die right now?
It's like near, 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 near. It's like, oh. Anyways, turned out he was super friendly. This guy is, this is awesome, right? He was actually logging, and like one valley over, and he had remembered of this fall that I guess probably his dad had brought him to or something when he was young.
Yeah,
and so he was looking for it, and we just happened to be at the same exact spot at the same exact time.
Funny,
wow,
but scary. Yeah, I mean.
You know Bell's Cabin?
Yep.
So we went up looking for Bell's Cabin. I didn't have a pin for it, but I guessed that it would be on one of the low spots of the lake. I found the three lowest spots of the lake, and I talked to somebody who said, oh, I've been there before. I don't know where it's at, but I know it's on this side of the lake. So that narrowed three spots down to two spots.
Nice.
So we go out, we grid off one spot, you know, 1 kilometer, and we hike 10 meter lengths to try and find it, right?
Yeah.
And it's just a chimney, you know. It's just a stone chimney. That's all it's there, right? But it was about the hunt, you know, to find it. And so we grid it off, and we're a couple hours in the woods, and we didn't find it. I was standing there, and I was like, okay, so it's not going to be further lower. It's not going to be lower down the hill than this, because that's all swamp. So it's probably going to be a little bit up on the bank. So let's follow the lakeside this way. And as we start hiking that way, I hear, and I'm thinking, like, is that a logging truck? Like, we're pretty far back in the woods right now. Like, and all of a sudden, this guy comes barreling through the woods on a four-wheeler, and he's got a bunch of gear on a trailer in the back. I mean, there's no trail. He's just driving right through the woods. and my hiking partner was with me. She's like, oh, Jesus, Jonathan, who are we running into up here? I goes, I don't know, but let's just be extra polite to him. So, you know, finally I said, hey, sir, you know, yeah, we're just out here hiking in the woods. I'm trying to be extra bubbly and nice so this guy doesn't murder me. And we had found a camp in this grid, which must be his camp.
Yeah.
Right? And he must be fishing up there or something, right? He's got a little kayak with him. But the camp was all set up like you could live there. Like, he had countertops built and benches built and an Amish stove and, like, all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyways, you know, I told him where, and he was kind of passive at me at first, trying to make small talk with him.
Oh.
And finally, I told him what we were looking for, and he was like, oh, that's just up there. I was like, sick. Sure enough, it was in the direction we were headed. So, but just funny, sometimes you run into those people in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
I know. We've seen too many movies. That's the problem, right?
That is the problem, right?
We always go there. Yeah. But, you know.
Yeah. They're just doing the same thing we're doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So you must have, with all these places you've gone, you must have some still on your bucket list to hit up.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, Cape Breton, although I spend, you know, some time there, I still have lots I want to explore there. I'm hoping maybe this spring I can do maybe like a week if my boss at home agrees. Because the problem is, like, if I go even on a 2-day, it's just never enough. You know, I really need to spend more time there.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, that Delaney Brook, that looks insane, but there's other areas too that I want to hit.
So you would say more or less Cape Breton would be kind of like to explore more there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've kind of ran out of places to go on the mainland. I'm not a big canoer. Like, I do a lot of kayak, especially sea kayak. So there is a large area of Southwest Nova Scotia I haven't really seen, because they're really conducive to canoe camping there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
4 or 5 days. I haven't really done that, but it's not really in my bag, let's say.
Yeah. You could take the kayak and go up to Paulet's Cove, go in there, get a couple falls in there, then go up north, get into Delaney's Brook, and go in there, and then make your way up around to Mead Cove.
Yeah, it'd be easier than trying to bushwhack. Yeah. Well, how's the seawall? What's going on there? Like, are they...
They are hoping to... I think they're hoping to start development and everything in the spring.
Nice.
I think, finally. Nice. They've got greenlit last year, finally. And I think from what I heard talking to some of the guys involved was that they were waiting for some assessments done by archaeologists and a few other environmental type people advising them about the route. It was originally supposed to be a very small kind of hut-to-hut hiking thing, but I think it's kind of evolved now that the government is involved a little bit. They're looking at more of the opportunities as far as creating more revenue out of it, whereas I think the original plan was to be, like, the trail wouldn't technically, I mean, they cut out some you know, hazards, like those spots where we were on our hands and knees underneath Tuckamore with our backpacks off, pushing them ahead and like trying to squeeze through. Like that sort of stuff will be cut. But as far as like trail management, it'll be mostly upkept by people utilizing the trail. Mm-hmm. Kind of like how Pulitz Cove Trail is still upkept. It used to be a four-wheeler path all the way inside, and although that's pretty much all gone by now. But yeah, that's kind of the idea. So it might take a little longer, but they were, from the last bit I heard from them, was that they were hoping to have like start development in the spring, which would be amazing. Because I think the original strategic plan that's on their website was basing everything off of like 2,000 people per year is what they would allow on the trail. And I think it's kind of gone up there a little bit, and they're kind of trying to push those numbers, which require a little bit more planning because of the usage.
Yeah.
People being wear and tear, people on the trails and washouts, especially I think one of the hazard areas was like the Pulitz Cove Trail, because that was originally part of it. And just because of when you're getting closer to Pulitz Cove, there's been a lot of washouts there. The trail's moved every year. Mm. And when you hike it every year, you see the difference. Like at that last section before you get to the cove is washed out quite a bit. So that was an area for concern from them, and rerouting a different trail or whatever. But hopefully it gets going, man. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the last, because they were, I think David Williams was on CBC, the last I heard, talking about starting it in the spring.
I mean, it's world-class scenery there, world-class hiking for sure. You know, you don't need to go to Scotland or something when you got this right in your backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting talking to the guys and how they were planning it and what models they were basing it off of. I think they were basing it off of, from what I understood, talking to some of the guys involved, was a similar hut-to-hut hiking system in New Zealand, which was similar topographical-wise and distance from airports and that sort of stuff. So it was more similar to the terrain and distance from access points and stuff than that we had here. So they were in contact with them, talking about how they set it up, what they've learned, that sort of stuff. But originally there was an issue too with the, like, to build the huts, they could helicopter in the supplies. However, at, like, you're talking 2 years ago, the last I've really talked in depth with somebody about it, it was an issue with resupplying. So, like, the stoves, I think they're supposed to have propane stoves and stuff. So, trying to get propane out there, they couldn't helicopter resupply them. So, that was an issue.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But hopefully, I mean, that's what I'm looking forward to. Seawall Trail being developed and having tons of world-class hiking, like multi-day stuff, because it's a beautiful landscape, and it's like untouched. It's one of the last kind of like really untouched areas on the island. Beautiful.
And I mean, you know, I've seen the route they've proposed and stuff like that, but there's more. Like, I mean, you know, you could really add to it, like do different loops easily. Yeah. Like once you're out on top of the plateau, and it's a wilderness area, right? So, yeah. I mean,
but talk about a leg workout.
Do you you have any plans for another book?
I guess the publisher has to talk to me. No, the Cape Breton one, actually, I approached the publisher. I said, you know what? Cape Breton's got too many cool waterfalls. And in the first book, I couldn't put enough in there. And I felt bad about it.
And, That's right.
Exactly. So I said, I'm going to put out another book just for Cape Breton if you're, you know, on board, because it's basically a partnership, right? And they were fantastic. Maybe ultimately I could do another volume of, you know, Nova Scotia, the whole province, and then still adding a bunch for Cape Breton, all new ones. I mean, I got enough knowledge of waterfalls. I must be about 700, 800 now. I mean, they're not all like fantastic, you know, let's be honest, but still I could easily put another 100 that are like pretty much jaw dropping for sure.
Yeah. Would you include things like caves and stuff like that?
Yeah. The whole cave, like there's a lot of, people wanting, you know, to know more about caves, and, you know, they kind of approach me for, you know, maybe a book or something, but I think that they're just too fragile. Waterfalls are fragile in their own way, but caves are even worse, and caves in Nova Scotia are all in gypsum limestone, so they're really brittle.
The safety factor.
Well, there's a safety factor, and you never know when they're, you know, the ceiling might drop 100%, and it's just like a soft rock, right? So it's like kind of dangerous, and yeah, I mean, it'd be cool.
I took a crew up to the Skylight. A couple of folks that worked for Lee for the summer, and a friend of mine who was in docked here on a sailboat from Labrador. And, you know, you have to climb under the shelves through the, through the water table and up and over and squeeze through caverns. And then it opens up into this big thing. And like they had like Jesse and, Ethan and Lori had like the day of their lives. And you know, you could, but easily you could give them that same experience by taking them to Turner Brook, you know, something feels like something that you would find in some crazy foreign country.
Yeah, I mean, Archway Cave, Skylight Cave, I mean, just...
It's nuts.
It's up there. We have a similar one here in on the mainland, Hayes Cave.
Yeah.
Really nice. There's actually a little lake in there for a while. And brought the kids in there. It's kind of...
I'm looking forward to checking out George Fraser Slot Canyon.
Yeah, that's my biggest mistake, I think.
Was publishing that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the pin is on... Google Maps.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. That's like,
that's my mistake.
Yeah.
it was actually, in the Nova Scotia book, it was an entry for the longest time. And then just before publication, I dropped it. I just cut it. And, I think we talked about this a little bit before.
Yeah.
And if something's really nice, you can't really keep it a secret. You got to kind of protect it by actually sending people there. But sometimes it's just too popular. Mm-hmm. And then there's no easy answer on that one.
No, yeah, there isn't.
Anyways, I don't care what you guys think. I'm going there.
Oh, no.
I'm going there in the spring. I can't wait. I've seen so many beautiful photos of that place.
Oh, yeah. No, it's hard not to take a good picture there. It's actually... Yeah. No, it's actually hard because it's a really harsh light and the water is really bright, but everything's dark. Anyways, no, it's quite nice. I mean, there's some more sets of slot canyons just above Ward's Falls. If you're the bushwhacking type of person.
You know me, baby.
Yeah. I mean, everybody goes to Ward's Falls and it's a nice trail. Actually, there's a shortcut if you go by the Blueberry Fields. It's cut down from like 6 kilometers to like 500 meters. And anyways, you get to the fall. It's quite nice. You can actually get above the fall if somebody has actually put up a little ladder. That's actually the picture that's on the cover of the Nova Scotia book.
Oh, yeah.
And right above that fall is part of a slot canyon. It's actually, it has a deep pool. It's quite cool. And then it just tapers above you to just like a little line of sky that you can see up. So that's part of it. At the end of this is a small fall, about 6 feet, and the water gets quite deep there. So the problem is a lot of people want to access it down by that side. So I said, well, I'll just jump, you know, over the fall. It's only 6 feet. The water's deep. But the problem is you can't get back up that because now you're in deep water and you have a 6 foot fall. There's just no way to do it. So if you're going to get access that, you have to do it from the lower part. And either if there's a ladder, that's great. Bouldering skill is a must. The bouldering is... It's not hard bouldering, but of course the rock is always wet.
Yeah.
If you go in right now, well, now it's wet ice. And ice. So it's like really, anyways, all that to say that above that, there's actually more slot canyons.
Cool.
Not as super like wicked, crazy like George Fraser, but still.
Yeah.
Like you don't think you're in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Interesting.
Really? I love that feeling when you get somewhere and you're just like, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah. Where could I be? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah.
Is it time?
I think so.
It's time for rapid fire, 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 fire. You got it that time.
I wish that would fade off. It will, but it doesn't. It's so abrupt.
Okay. You ready?
All right.
We know what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm feeling nervous here.
So rapid fire.
Okay. No, I'll think about the last thing.
Yeah. Biggest inspiration.
I don't want to be crass, but I don't really have one.
That's okay.
I mean, Bryson said it was himself.
So.
It could be worse, I guess.
When are you the most productive?
Mornings.
Who are your... Do you have any favorite Instagram accounts?
I'm a social media creator. I actually don't really look at people's stories.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have any other favorite like Trail Peak, like people who like post?
Not really. I could have. It's just, it's a matter of going to an area that I've not been to. Like, oh, if yes. I'm going to BC, I know who to look for.
Yeah.
And just get all these trails. Yeah.
That's fair. Apples or oranges?
Apples.
Pie or cake?
Neither.
Neither?
No.
Always apples?
No, I just lost my sweet tooth. I don't know. I'm getting too old or something.
Or does that happen?
Well, I think I just fill up with beer and then I'm not really okay. I'm not hungry fair. Anymore. Yeah.
So for hiking, mountain peaks or valley deeps?
Mountain peaks.
Mountain peaks.
Yeah.
Favorite animal?
Hamster.
Really?
Yeah. I had one when I was a kid. Yeah. It just kind of...
You ever see those hamsters that are hairless and they look like the house hippo?
No.
Oh, that's so cool.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah. Favorite book or author?
I guess I always like Stephen King a lot. I like the thriller horror genre.
Fair. He seemed like a guy who needs a little adrenaline rush in his free time.
I think I'm looking at you guys. I think that's a big part of exploring is that rush that you get from it.
Absolutely.
And as you do it more and more, you need to do it more and more. It's just, it's this perpetual cycle and it just gets higher and higher. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't go hiking to places I've been before because I've kind of seen it and it's boring.
Yeah, mine is like, let's take this. Okay. Right. Yeah. We did this thing. Okay. Well, how can we times that by 10 and then do that? And then once that's done, I'm like, okay, well, how can we times that by 10?
So when we were talking earlier, and this is, we're running out this rapid fire. We're just going to go for it. We were talking about like somebody, your easy is not somebody else's easy. Well, that's because you're always raising the bar for yourself. So the first time I did Pollitt's Cove, I was like a year and a half sober. And like, I thought I was going to die. Like several times, there was actually a point about the halfway mark where I was seriously considering that I might have been taking a heart attack. Like, this must be what a heart attack feels like.
Brutal.
Yeah. But you know, like, that seems so like not like that hike does not seem intimidating now.
Yeah.
You know, since you kind of raise the bar for yourself and things like that. And the other thing about is like, you know, you always look for the adrenaline rush, but it's also nice to be like shocked into the present moment.
Mm.
You know, like all of the cares of the world are removed and you only need to worry about where you're at and what you're doing and where you're going to step next. And,
oh, 100%. Yeah. That's, yeah. There, you know, no phones, nothing, no house things to think about. Or, yeah.
Oh, it's just we did
survive.
We did this trip in June to Marguerite and it's been a trip that I wanted to do like the entire Marguerite River. It's been something I've been thinking about since I was a kid. I'm like, okay. I always want to do this. And we're sitting on top of the Highlands and it was on the first snowshoe trip we went on last winter.
Yeah.
And we're camping above, like in the back of Franny Mountain, overlooking the Clyburn River. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, what trips are we going to do this year? Let's do some trips this year. And so I thought, I'm like, Marguerite River, we're going to paddle the whole Marguerite River. We're going to do it in the spring when the water's huge and we're going to go as far up as we can get. We're going to scout it. Find a spot where we can get in with canoes and we're going to do as a trip and film a mini documentary about it. And so I put together a team, of which maybe two of us had any real experience in a canoe. And so we had, a bunch of people like what, well, Jimmy Peterson, fishing guide in Shetty Camp in Marguerite. We're sitting there the night before and I have it on video and he goes, I've never been in a canoe. And we're hitting like
big water,
big white water. Right. Oh. And it's like bomb. And plus with like full canoes, full of gear, like film gear. I was on an inflatable paddleboard, without the fin and, that whole upper river. So when you take Second Forks, that whole section above Second Forks is ridiculous. It is just like tight canyons, big white water. And we were about two days above that. And then a third day we camped at First Fork, which is just below Second Forks by Cape Clear. And then we spent two other days in the river. But that trip, like being out there in that environment, like I remember on day four when we woke up, we're at Swimming Hole Pool, which is down toward the Dancing Goat area. And the whole crew was just like, man, why can't we just do this? This is all, why can't we do this all the time? This is like what it's about. You hit like, we went through, it was almost like a movie because you hit out with this crew that's like ragtag crew and we hit the river and everybody's learning together. And like I had a walkie on me, so I would run the rapids first and tell people like, hey, you know, you might want to get out and rope the canoes through this rapid because you guys aren't going to be able to make it through this one. It's too crazy. And then I would be up ahead filming it. I'd be in the bushes with a camera and a drone in the air at the same time, trying to film both and then pack it up and then jump on and keep going. But yeah, those environments, being in that and like seeing how people work together and come together as a team underneath like that unique stress and they bond together. It's amazing. And then we finished like that trip was amazing.
Also just sidebar. So they got a canoe off of a friend of the pod. His name is Denis. And I think we're going to try and get Denis on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fucking destroyed.
Okay. Let's back it up a little bit.
So destroyed.
So I'll just quickly tell this story. I knew Denis. So I did a podcast last year with AJ Frazier and Ben Fury, who kayaked Cape Breton Island like 10 years ago. And so
around the island,
with no experience. Like one of the guys had experience, the other guy had no experience, and they got caught up in storms and took like a month to do it. And so AJ, I messaged AJ. I said, listen, I can't find canoes for this trip. Like, I'm trying to buy some used ones. If you know anybody with used ones or that would loan us a canoe. So AJ said, yeah, I got a 14-foot Old Town. I can loan you. And then I got a call randomly from this guy. And he goes, all right, AJ, I'm moving to Cape Breton. AJ said you might need a canoe. So I said, yeah. He goes, well, I'm coming up from Ontario. I'm bringing some with me if I fix up old canoes. So I drove to Sydney. And I went up with a trailer to pick AJ's up, one of his. And he's loading on a Kevlar one. And it's, like, super light. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not taking that in the Margaree. It was what? It'd be fine. I go, no. That'll get smashed. I have a Kevlar on and I went to Lower River and I smashed the shit out of it. We're not taking that. And so, I go, what else you got? You got any old shitty Old Towns? He goes, yeah, it's missing a seat and it's delaminating. And I go, yep, I'll take that one. And so I loaded up. I said, I'll build a seat for it. So we took it home and we were getting ready the next day because everybody was arriving and, Alec and I were building a seat. We built a seat for it, fixed some stuff up on it. We took it. We left a piece of paint on every rock from the top of the Margaree to the bottom. And it was, they were bailing out as they were paddling.
Oh my God.
So that, I mean, we did it and we did the trip, but I mean, man, oh man, it was, it needs to be, I told him I need to put it on display at the shop. Whenever I have enough room and space to put a 17 foot Old Town on display at the shop and be like, that's what the Margaree River can do to your canoe.
So Stephen King, favorite book, favorite author. Last one. Do you know what marry, fuck, kill is?
No.
So who would you marry? Who would you fuck? Who would you kill? This is Cascade Falls, Slider Falls, Drop Falls. Like, which one you marrying? Which one you go fucking? Which one you gonna kill?
In those three?
Yeah. Cascades.
Such a fucking weird question.
Cascades, sliders, and drops.
Yeah, Cascades I could kill because it's like it's boring to say Cascade. Uh-huh. And then Mary, what's my options again?
Slider and drop.
The drop. I'm going to marry the drop for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then you'd fuck the slider.
Oh yeah, I mean it's sliding, right?
Yeah, you jump right on a paddle and go right over that.
Right over it.
Cool. Sounds great. Yeah.
they never ask me questions like that on CBC.
Yeah, we're not CBC, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it, man. We wrapped up that. We did a good, man. Like, we probably go on for like hours. I think we're even over the hour mark now. But before we jump off, tell people how to follow you, get a hold of you, buy your books, where they can get everything. Give it a go.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a weirdo. Like, I don't, you know, selling the books is good, but I don't really care at the end of the day. I want to inspire people to be out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? If you don't have any money to buy a book, don't worry about it. Most of the stuff I post is online on Trail Peak. That's free.
I'm sure the publisher loves to hear that.
Well, they make more money out of the book than me, so yeah. You know, I don't care. Or follow on social media. I'm pretty responsive. It's hilarious. I'll get, private messages all the time. It's like, I'm trying to head to such and such a fall. I'm in the woods right now, and I don't think I'm at the right spot. And it's like, well, okay, what do you see? You know, like I said. but I'm pretty responsive. I don't care. I'll respond to you. The books, they're on sale everywhere in Nova Scotia in bookstores. The one in Cape Breton in particular is sold out of Cape Breton Curiosity in Sydney. On paper books, that's right.
And we just seen them at Mac too today.
Oh, finally. Yeah. Those bastards. I wanted to be in Mac forever because that's like my favorite store.
Right.
My first paycheck ever, I spent everything at Mac. everything was purple too back then. It was awesome. Yeah. They wouldn't carry my book and they never actually told me why. It was the weirdest thing. Anyway, so I'm happy.
Well, now they're carrying it.
Hell yeah. And then that's going to bring up the sales at the MEC, I'm sure.
And so what's your Instagram? At Lalonde B?
Yeah, I think it's at Lalonde B. Sorry. Thanks.
Yeah.
You're better than I am. I'm remembering that shit. And then, Facebook is Waterfalls of Nova Scotia, at Waterfalls of Nova Scotia, all in one word.
It's a great Facebook group.
And then Twitter, I think I'm Benoit.Lalonde or Benoit Lalonde. All together.
You'll figure it out. People will figure it out.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Just Google Benoit Lalonde and Waterfalls. You'll find me.
I'm the guy. I'm that guy.
I am that guy.
Hey, man. Well, awesome. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, guys. Right. It was awesome.
Take care.
Peace. Well, that's the podcast for this week, folks. Hope you guys liked it. What do you think, Jonathan?
Yeah. I love Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, great dude.
Yeah, this was an awesome, awesome time sitting down and chatting with them. We could have probably chatted for like 2 or 3 hours at the pace that we were going, but we had to cut it. Nobody wants to listen to that us blabble, blabber, blabber, blah, blah, blah.
Nerd out.
Yeah, that one too. Until next week, when we have the nighttime podcast host,
Jordan Bent.
Jordan Bonaparte.
Jordan Bonaparte.
Yeah. I forgot to.
When we have the nighttime podcast host.
Yeah. And we have the nighttime podcast host,
Jordan Bonaparte.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to Nighttime Podcast, it's a true crime podcast. He's originally from Cape Breton, lives in Halifax.
You can check us out at Live Life Intense on all socials and myself at Sounds of Fire on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you next week. Peace.